When we get on the start line, we all have the race, but we all want to get from A to B. And I think that's what I like about running. It helps to destigmatise. And so the advantage of that is we don't know who's next to us. It could be a priest on one side. It could be an ex-murderer, extreme case scenario, or it could be a policeman. We don't know. And that's the beauty of running. When you have a bib on, no matter what your background is, everybody wants to cheer you on.
Kia ora tātou. That was Jamie Hawker. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio. Interesting conversations with interesting runners. Scott shoes and Ultra Spy packs clad us on our feet and on our backs.
Which way around?
I was trying to go a bit Dr. Seuss there, but it's just rhymes. It's just rhyming. Anyway, but like we are supported by Scott Shoes and we are supported by Ultra Spire. They have been our ride or die for a while. And if you want to go check out the wonderful things that they have for offer, you can go to ultraspire.co.nz or scottrunning.nz and check out the amazing things that they have for you. Mm. And it's just as simple as that.
All right. I've got a challenge for you,
okay,
Matt.
Go.
It's called the Wild Things Challenges. So the trial directory, alongside the trial directory, they have these challenges, and there's one for Auckland.
Is there?
The Autumn Auckland Trails series, sponsored by Shoe Science. Huh. And so you sign up, you join up, and you have a look at 20 sweet trails around Auckland, and you go run them, and you earn points, because some of them have got a bigger gnarl factor than others.
Ah, some of them are more gnarly than others.
Some of them are more gnarly than others. Some of them are more grunty than others.
Ah, right.
And you earn points, and you can have a look. There's a little leaderboard.
Yeah.
I think I'm sitting in 12th.
Nice.
After a couple of runs at the weekend. It's a great way to get your mojo back after all these blinking lockdowns.
It actually really is.
Speaking seriously.
There's lots of us have felt dent today because we can't plan for anything. But if you go out on your own speed and you're part of something bigger, you go to wildthings.club, sign up for a VIP membership, you get 15 months, DCR 2021 is the code. We get a little bit of a ooh la la, and Mel's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're happy too.
Sal's happy. You're happy, we're happy.
Yep.
Everyone's happy. Use that code, DCR 2021, 15 months of Wild Things VIP membership for the price of 12.
Ooh la la. It goes something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Ditchurch Radio.
Wow.
Episode 135.
We made it.
We did. What a huge weekend.
Massive weekend.
Yeah. Wow.
Gosh. There was some amazing racing going on all over the Motu and internationally, wasn't there? What have we got? Northburn.
Mm-hmm.
The IAU 6-hour race.
Yep.
Run Rupuna.
Mm-hmm.
Barclay Marathons.
Mm-hmm.
Ate its young again.
Did.
Gosh.
Did. It was all just kind of getting going, and then it was done.
Yeah, I was like, let's go.
Yeah, right, okay, get the popcorn on. Yeah. Just get, all right.
Hit refresh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, we got out for a couple of runs, though, sort of socially distanced.
Yeah, socially distanced.
Not because of that other thing, but just, yeah. I was, yeah, I mean, I had a fun run yesterday, and your run looked meaty.
Oh, look, and we talked to this week's guest, Jamie Hawker, about, yeah, my run was fine.
It just was.
And it was totally, like, absolutely couched in the thing of my privilege to do it, and of course, it's amazing. But that was a real change, like, considering the last year and a bit we've had, where everything's kind of either been up and down or a bit dramatic or this undercurrent of something.
Yeah.
Going out and doing the run and just coming home and going, eh. You know, like, it was good. It was really good.
Yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of up and down, I continued to fail to learn lessons.
Right.
Like, I was supposed to be on an easy week. So, you know, taking it easy, and was down for like an easy hour run on Sunday. So I thought, oh, well, hey, I'll look up the old Wild Things trail directory for another Shoe Science Auckland Trail Challenge Run, you know, something that will vaguely fit the description. Spotted the Waikowhai Trail Run,
yep.
which was only going to be about 11 or 12K. And I thought, oh, yeah, that should be all right.
Yep. Yeah, it's fine.
That should be okay. That'll coach will be happy with that. And I was a little bit hilly, but, you know, maybe an hour and a quarter maybe should do it, maybe an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I convinced my friend Peter, who came out on his first trail run last week.
Yes.
Yeah, said, hey, this will be good for your second trail run.
Yeah.
Look, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Wasn't an hour and a quarter.
What was it?
Wasn't an hour and a half. Wasn't an hour and three quarters. It was over 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of climbing, a lot of stairs. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was beautiful though. Absolutely stunning along the coast, the Manukau Harbour coast, and it just had stunning views, a little bit of beach, but you were just going up and down, up and down. Very reminiscent of Wutuke, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the time. Like, there was very little flat running.
Huh.
Yeah, just sort of like a shark's tooth, really. So get amongst it, Wild Things Trail Challenge people.
Yeah, get but amongst just
look
it.
At your, look at the Gnarl factor.
Look at the Gnarl factor.
Pay
of that
closer
trail.
Attention to the Gnarl factor.
Oh, did you
and the grunt
disregard
factor.
It?
I just didn't even look at it.
You're just straight into it.
I was straight into it. Yeah.
Linfield, I mean, it's not normally known for its challenging trail.
Well, running. I did. Peter did point out to me that he knew that we came to Hillsborough, right? So there should have been a clue there.
I love Hillsborough, right?
Yeah, good point. Anyway, all right. Yeah.
So, I mean, we've got a bumper show for you, episode show, whatever you want to call it, podcast, pod.
Singing some dancing.
This is what we do. Andrew McDowell, old mate. Third Beatle, who spent the weekend at North Bend, not just hanging out, but bloody well coming second.
Boom!
Yeah.
So yeah. I think we can claim that.
That's a Dirt Church Radio podium. That's absolutely right.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, we got that catch-up coming up later on. Talks about the race, but also the incredible vibe of the event put on by Terry Davison's team. And we've truly privileged to have a conversation with someone who gives so much to this sport, Jamie Hawker.
Mm.
So this man's he's a local legend down in Christchurch and the Port Hills Athletic. Mm-hmm. He's captain of the Port Hills Athletic Club, race organizer of the Crater Rim. He's Speed Freaks supporter and coach. That's the Odyssey House running.
Tied up with Achilles.
Achilles and father to Scotty. So
who's not a bad runner.
Scotty Hawker. I've heard he's okay. Mm. What a legend! Mm. And what an amazing conversation.
Mm. Hey, look, heaps of feedback about the Ali Pottinger and Kerry Squadron Suter, chat last week. Amazing. We so enjoyed catching up with them, and we got heaps of feedback too.
Yeah, absolutely. People vibed on it, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. I know we talk a lot about running and running adjacent stuff, but it was really nice to kind of get in the weeds.
Yeah. How you been, Matt?
Look, again, this week, much like the continuation of my run, has been fine. And it's kind of, it feels odd to say not much happened.
But that's okay.
It was good.
Yeah, that's good. I got back to parkrun on Saturday. I had a few weeks away with lockdowns and being away and stuff. So that was great. I saw lots of friendly faces, including Jenny Hurst, who was a speedster.
She's flying.
She was flying.
Flying.
Yeah. And then she took about 500 people for a run on Sunday. So.
Yeah, the Wild Things must start.
Yeah. You know, I think, have I mentioned before how much I love parkrun?
No, you've never brought it up.
Never brought it up? Yeah. Anyway, I just love how it encourages people of all abilities and shapes and sizes to get along and get out and give it a go in a super friendly atmosphere, which kind of, I mean, that's kind of bounces back to what Jamie talks about, doesn't it? But it's just brilliant. And Sunday's run was amazing and beautiful. And I enjoyed having that easier week too.
Yeah.
So notwithstanding the one hour run,
yeah.
You know, the idea of having scheduling in an easier week every 3 or 4 weeks just to give your body time to consolidate and rest after a heavy few weeks, I definitely would recommend it.
Fantastic.
Mm.
And so Patrons, if you would like to support what we do, we would love you to come on board. If you set up a regular donation, even for the cost of a cup of coffee a month, help us do things that, you know, we want to do and we struggle to do, like buying audio equipment and to improve our sound quality, getting to more races to interview people, and it helps keep the lights on with Domain, calls, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Thank you. At patreon.com/dirtchurchradio. And if that's not in your wheelhouse at the moment, we're just so glad you're all here and listening to us. So thank you.
Thank you. Stuff you should know. Just the jazz hands, I think.
I just
was
did
that
the
jazz hands?
That was jazz hands, and I did the harmonic on the ukulele at the end.
Andrew McDowell would be very proud of us. Anyway, so Northburn on this weekend. So Terry Davis, a broken man because there was no snow.
Yeah. But I remember that conversation that we had, and he was laughing his head off how that woman was completely frozen on one side of her body.
Snow on one half.
No, he'd be disappointed.
Yeah. Anyway, but it still had 10,000 metres of climbing. And some tough terrain, you know, a survival mission as much as a race, really, isn't it? And what a race this year. There was 100%. Some great racing. Yeah. Azumi Konoko, first woman home in 26 hours, 8 minutes and 43 seconds. And she was pushing the front, you know, pushing the podium all race. So Jean Beaumont, second woman home in 26 hours, 16 minutes and 35 seconds. And Tanya Miller, 26 hours, 37 minutes and 21 seconds. Do the maths on that. So just 8 minutes between Azumi and Jean, and then only 21 minutes back to Tanya in third. Four women in the top 10. Extraordinary.
Amazing.
You know, as I said, Azumi Konoko was pushing the front of the race for much of the day too, and she ended up in fourth and Jean
and she
fifth.
Was second overall at one point, wasn't she?
Yeah, totally. She was until that last lap. So, you know. Until somebody bloody overtook her.
Oh, no.
Rude man.
Yeah, rude man.
Anyway,
So in the men's race, it was Louis Schindler in 23 hours, 59 minutes and 21 seconds, just squeaking in under 24 hours. It's an incredible effort. Second was our man Andrew McDowell in 24 hours. We're claiming it 48 minutes and 16 seconds. And third was Chris Taylor in 25 hours, 47 minutes and 8 seconds. I mean, it's extraordinary that Louis and Azumi both backed up. After Tarawera. I mean, Louis was third at the 100-mile and Azumi was second woman at the 102K. Just, I mean, what an it, like, yeah, 5 weeks ago. And then to do something like Northman is just inconceivable.
Yeah. I mean, just, yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. It looked like a really tough day out there and lots of people didn't complete it. You know, Matt Urbanski, who won the 100-mile at Tarawera, was a DNF. And you know, there were a few other runners who would have expected to get across the line.
Absolutely.
And had a tough old day and called it quits. But, not called it quits, but, you know, had the race beat them, didn't they?
That's right.
That's what happens at Northburn.
And shout out to our mates Billy Fung, 39 hours and 2 seconds, and Tago Marapara, he toughed it out too. And he's a tough. We're born one day apart, did you know that?
I'm one day older
than he is. Yeah. 45 hours and 32 minutes. That's a long time to be out amongst it.
Oh, sure is. Amazing. Tough. Yeah.
We had the privilege of Billy texting us the whole time. He's in our friendship group. And they got gradually more less kind of celebratory as the text, like just sort of getting back to like, I'm tired. But man, what a thing.
What a thing indeed. Yeah, well done. Everyone who lined up there.
Yeah. And it's not only the marathon, it's not only the 100-mile at Northburn. Fiona Sims was the overall and first female in the marathon of 6 hours, 13 minutes and 27 seconds, with Jim Kearse, first man home in 10 hours, 27, 11.
In the 50K, Maureen Stakowitz, won the women's in 6 hours, 14 and 15, and then backed up as crew.
Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Dana Hunter was second in 6:28:31 and Miriam Belsky third in 6:58:57.
In the men's 50K, it was Andrew Stevenson, won in 5:37:07. Tom Steele was second in 5:37:47. Damn, son. And Yoni Keeps was third in 5:39:06. Man, what a race. I mean, imagine like podium in an ultramarathon on your 21st birthday. What a thing.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Hey, and side note, you know, Yoni's dad, Ben, was fifth home in the miler, 26:29:42.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wonder if he got to draw the shorts and drive home out of those two.
Yeah. I'm sore. Can you? I'm sore.
I'm sore. I'm old. Yeah. I'm here. In the 100K, Sarah Healy was first home in 17 hours, 13 minutes and 23 seconds, with Sarah Grimms second in 19, 28, 12, and Pauline Grice third in 27, 35, 49.
Yeah, and in the men's 100K, it was Lewis Latham first in 12, 32, 30, Jared Reynolds second in 15, 26, 45.
And Johnny Almario third in 17, 13, 16. I was just looking at the speed of that man.
Yes. Extraordinary.
That's a big gap.
That's a big gap, Lewis. Yeah. Yeah. Right. As we said, we caught up with 100 mile second place getter and friend of the pod and sound genius, Andrew McDowell. Dirtchurch Radio. Kia ora and welcome to the man who proves that Aucklanders can climb mountains, Andrew McDowell.
Hey guys, how you going?
Just in awe. I mean, you are the wind beneath our wings. Take that, South Islanders. There's at least one of us.
Oh yeah, but a guy from Nelson won, so
well, he's still... Swiss though, really, isn't he?
Yeah, true, true. Yeah. It's an import. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations. What a performance, mate.
Hey, thanks, Eugene. It was a great, what an amazing weekend, and you know, speaking personally, just one of those days where everything finally clicked. I mean, it took me long enough. This was my fifth time at Northburn. I've had many highs and lows in that time, often in the space of 1 hour, but just, you know, summarizing each race, there's been some gnarly ones. I've slept in the tents in the middle of the night trying to convince myself to go out on another loop and things like that. But this was not one of those. It was one of those ones where energy was at 100% the entire race. And it was just, you know, sometimes you feel like you can put the hammer down and you kind of just hope for the best. And it seemed to work this time.
I mean, you certainly had a really disciplined preparation. You know, you put down an intense amount of volume, even to the point at Tarawera, how you were kind of jumping out at people. He was at the Redwoods and he'd just jump out at people and go, you want to run into the finish together? Run in with people who were too shell-shocked to say, no.
It was creepier than that. That wasn't creepy enough. It was way creepier.
Hey.
It was, yeah, because that was really hard, because I actually made a, I'm struggling with words a little bit today, you'll have to forgive me, but a concerted effort to not enter anything else. Historically, I've always tried to do some form of Tarawera and Northburn.
Right.
And it's, I just sort of thought, you know, okay, let's be really boring here. Let's go for the two sort of cornerstones of training for a race, and that was consistency and specificity. Well, as specific as you can get with Auckland, with Mount Eden. It's not quite Northburn, but just sort of saying, right, no, don't wreck myself for anything else. All eggs in one basket, which is always, you know, you can if it goes horribly wrong, you sort of go, oh my God, the last 3 months of hard training for a bad day. But the flip side is that you start the race in a really good headspace, knowing that you've done everything you can, and now you just got to execute correctly, and you know, maybe it'll go okay. Yeah, that seemed to help.
Set the scene for us, for those who don't know. I mean, it's not Maunga Kiki, you know, that's Mount Eden.
Maunga Kiki is One Tree Hill. One Tree Hill is Maunga Kiki.
Damn.
Mangafo.
Mangafo. Sorry, it's not Mangafo. But what is Northburn like?
It is beautiful, but it's very barren. Not a lot of trees. I think you sit at about 200 metres, roughly. Sorry if I'm miles off there. And you go up to about 16 or 1700. So that's the whole range. And there are three loops. They are 50 kilometres. Now the second loop is 60 kilometres and the final loop is 50. This is the first year that the second loop has been 60 instead of having the extra 10 kilometres in the final loop. And you spend most of the time completely out in the open. You're not under trees or on nice buttery single trail or anything like that. It's a lot of rocks, really hard on the feet, and just a huge amount of climbing. My watch had me at exactly Everest. I think it was 1 meter short of Everest, which is a bit annoying, but that's okay. I'll take it. And the first loop of the 50Ks actually is quite beautiful in the sense that it changes terrain a reasonable amount. You are on a lot of rocks, but you are also on really spongy, it's actually really hard to describe. It's like a, imagine a stream, but the sides of the stream have overgrown over the stream, and there's only like a few inches between these mossy beds, and then underneath you is a river. It's really weird terrain. So there's a lot of that on the first loop. And it starts to get hot. We had a lot of cloud cover this year. Sorry, I'm rambling a little bit.
No.
We had a lot of cloud cover this year, especially for pretty much all of the first loop, which was great. It kept the temperature down. One of the biggest problems with Northburn, I certainly have, is that the heat of the day is just horrendous normally. But this year, I'd have to say overall the conditions this year were the best I've ever experienced in 5 years there.
Huh.
It was neither too hot or too cold. It was not that windy. It got a tiny bit cold in the evenings, but I ran the entire race in a t-shirt, which I've never been able to do before. So, if you want to use sort of the benchmark of the probably the best imaginable weather you could ever get, or in Terry's case, the worst imaginable weather you could ever get, that was this weekend. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So not too hot for the first loop, which it often is, and I made sure. I didn't go too hard, and all I had on my watch was my heart rate. I don't look at any other metrics. I just look at heart rate for the first sort of 8 hours of a run. And that meant that every time I sort of got up to what I personally know is too much, sort of 135 to 140 on a long run like this, I'd pull back, I'd walk or whatever. So I made sure that I didn't overdo it on that first loop. I came through the 50K in about 6 hours 48, I think it was, had 12 minutes at the aid station, and I was in about 14th place, I think. A pretty super crew that I had that was hanging out there, because I was uncrewed for this, but you're never really uncrewed. There's always people to help you. And in my case, I had Katie Wright. You might have heard of her. Maureen, I'm going to screw up her last name. She had just won the 50K. Nancy Jiang was there helping out as well, and Helene Baron from Wanaka, also great.
What a crew!
Wow,
that was my impromptu four person crew. I felt like a very lucky fella, so they got me out the door 12 minutes. But I think I left in about 16th place, bang on the 7 hour mark, but feeling really good and thinking, okay, this is time to start doing some work now. And then they have the thing called the death climb at the start of loop two. And it is 14 kilometres from, and all you do is go from the lowest point to the highest point in the race, pretty much. And so it's a grind. And, you know, we're at 1 o'clock in the afternoon now, so the sun is on you. There's not a lot of wind, but like I say, it's not as hot as previous years.
And you're hiking, you're not running that, or are you running parts of it?
I decided that I was going to make the most of the fact that I felt good. So right. I actually put the hammer down on the death climb. And I started it with good old Tom Hunt and Glenn Sutton, old Suts, and we were chatting away for a little bit. And then I just kind of thought, you know, I feel good, and I could hang out here for a while, but I think I'll just get on with it. So I left those two rookies for dead and headed on up the hill. And I actually made my way past 9 people on the death climb. So I passed 9 people getting to the top all the way to Leaning Rock.
Wow.
And that and still thinking, because of course you're going, oh God, was that dumb? Am I going to pay for that later? But I thought, no, back yourself. Give it a go. And 2 years ago when I got to Leaning Rock, I sat down and started crying. Because I felt so terrible. So it was actually quite emotionally positive to get there this time feeling, you know, awesome, just feeling absolutely great. So when you get to this point, you then turn around and you run back down again, and all those people that you just passed are coming up the other way. And so you get a little bit of an eyeball from everybody, but of course it's all very nice high fives and all sorts of loveliness. Then you do the water race, which is normally in the third, historically has been in the third loop, but it's in the second loop this time, which is an extra 10Ks, which drops you right down, and then you have this massive climb back up to the beautiful spot called TW Aid Station. And that's really only halfway through the second loop. Then you've got to do so it goes on and on and on. The second loop is massive, but I just felt good the whole way through. As I got to it, I knew I had still had plenty of people ahead of me, but I was climbing up one of the many climbs up to Mount Horn, and I came across old Bernard Robinson, who's a very, very good ultra runner, sitting down on a rock, talking on the phone to somebody. And apparently he'd been just very, you know, not a happy camper for the last few hours, not feeling very good. So made sure he was all right. He told me to keep going. And but I'm starting to think, oh, I'm kind of making my way through a few more people here. And then on one of the final descents, I saw this person sort of lying in the sun. I actually thought they were like just a random person enjoying a beautiful evening because the sun was on. It was a beautiful spot for someone to be just hanging out. But then they yelled back, oh, no, I'm all good. I was like, oh, sweet as, bro. You're all good. Okay, cool, keep going. And he said, oh, I'm just not feeling very good either. I thought, oh, geez. And it turned out to be old Matt Urbanski from Tarawera. And so he was chipper, but apparently he was not feeling very good either. I did see both of those guys later on. They both did DNF, I think, at the 110K mark. But they were running in, so I guess they were all right. I managed to pass Chris Taylor on the last 10Ks coming into the second loop, which is finishing the second loop, which is along these pylons. And one of those 10Ks, it feels like 100. It seems to take forever. But I could see this head torch ahead of me, and it was one of those funny moments where it's still pitch black, it's middle of the night here, and that our head torches suddenly looked at each other. So you see these two beams just make contact across the valley, and it had that sort of like, and I don't know who it is, but I knew there was only a few people ahead, and I thought, oh, I wonder if that's a, because I knew there was a female ahead, I wonder if that's a female or if it's male. Do I chase them? But no matter, it didn't matter because I never caught them. I was going as hard as I could, and they kept turning around. I kept seeing the beam hit me, and I was like, oh, they're not letting me get anywhere near them, whoever they are. Got into the aid station at the, which of course is the same place. You always start and finish each loop in the same place, but the loops are all different. And that's why it's so mentally tough at North Burners, because often you finish that second loop and you've done historically 100 or 110K in the case of this year, and you're pretty shattered, and you know, it's the middle of the night, and the idea that now you've got to go out again and do another 50K, and you know, your car's right there, or you could just go back to your ACOM, or there's a solid draw to try and make you stay in one place. I came in there and I was in third overall, and it turned out it was Kanoka who was had been holding me off. She came into the aid station and grabbed, I didn't see this, but good old Adam Keane was there, and he was amazing the whole weekend, by the way. Old Savage, I don't think he slept, and he ran the 50K and then just hung around and helped people out. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Top bloke, but he told me that she ran in, grabbed a couple of bottles of water, a couple of packets of stuff, and then just took off again. Like her transition was like 2 minutes. And here I am faffing about with staff and all that sort of carry on, just getting help from other people again, which was great. I thought, oh, okay, you know, I'll see if I can catch her, but man, she's taken off, you know. But I was told that Louis Schindler, who had been leading for most of the race, I think. Adam said, look, he's like, you know, an hour and a half ahead. Like, don't try and chase him. Be smart. You know, I was like, yeah, no, that's fair enough. An hour and a half is far too much to try and to make up on 150K loop. And of course he's a great runner. Although I will add, I beat him by 14 seconds at Old Ghost Road 2 years ago, 14 seconds. I didn't know that, actually. I had to look it up. I wasn't worried about him. Just sort of focused on trying to chase Konoka. I really, really pushed that first hill climb up to Mount Horn again. So you go all the way back up to TW, then you drop all the way back down. There's a bit of repetition and a bit of mind games, because you're like, some of the climbs you're just like, I've already done this climb like 12 hours ago, and right. It was so much easier 12 hours ago, and now it's really, really hard, and it's the same stuff. But when I got up to TW, the guys that were volunteering there, they said, "Oh, Louis's not looking too well, mate. He's sat down here for a while, and you've closed the gap a bit on him, eh? You know, he's only 45 minutes ahead." And I thought, "Oh, okay. Oh, now I'm interested. Oh, 45. All right, okay." So you go in the loop of despair, and you come all the way back to that same spot, and that takes a few hours. And I said to them, "What's it now?" And they said, 23 minutes. I said, "Oh, shit." Okay. And they said, but we've got some bad news. I said, "Well, what's that?" We told him that you were chasing him down, and he's taken off. I was like, "Oh, man, is that right?" And then what you do is you go all the way up to Leaning Rock again and back. So it's an out and back to this aid station. So what happens is you get to see the other person coming back down. You can work out pretty well how far ahead they are.
Oh.
It turns out he was doing the splits to the minute. He was really worried.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, 42 minutes. He'd got it back up to 42 minutes. So he'd really, really taken off. And it was like, "Oh, man.
Wow. What a race." And in that women's race too, I mean, they all finished so close together, within half an hour of each other, the top three. And four women in the top 10. It was just a great weekend of racing. And the other thing about North Bend, legendary vibe.
Yes. Look, the people that, like, I remember just sitting down afterwards, looking at everybody, going, "Man, there are some awesome athletes here, and no egos." You know, to have people that are so good at what they do, even if it is a hobby or a glorified hobby, for them to just walk around like we're all the same. It's everyone's helping everyone out. It's like I say, an ego-free event, which is super, super cool.
Oh, so cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking us there, really, and representing DCR. Worry. We consider that you were representing us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know.
I did wear a T-shirt on the first day. So
oh, nice. That'll do. That'll do. Yeah.
So did Ian, by the way. He kept his shirt on.
Oh, nice. All right. Well done, mate. And we'll catch up with you soon, eh?
Yeah, pleasure to talk, chaps. Take care.
All right.
See ya.
Never heard him sound remotely tired before.
Yeah.
Tough
old weekend.
Just rubbed the polish off him slightly, but... Hey, it was the
I'm just glad that there's something that does.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he's always like...
Wound full on. The IAU Global Solidarity Run, which was raced by the New Zealand team, the women. I mean, you remember this. I think this was a year ago that we're all in lockdown. Almost to the day that it happened again. But like Mel Aitken, 73.34 kilometres. Dawn Tuffery, 68.95. Fiona Hayweis, 68.35. Nicole Statler, 65.59. Emma Bassett, 65.43. Jamie Stevenson, 62.38. Kirsty Hamlin, 60.64, Deborah Breit in 60.03, and Maggie Davis in 58.03 kilometres.
Yeah.
My gosh.
So Mel's total is further than last year's effort. So she ran 73.2 last year and 73.34 this year, which, remember, it surpasses the national record set by Shannon Leelitt of 71.1. But because of the nature of the event, it being virtual and things, and the fact that it was on an uncertified course, the distance doesn't stand for record purposes. But still, you know, twice she's run more than the national record. So she did hers around the Dunedin Peninsula, Otago Peninsula, didn't she? Others went down to a track. So it was you could run it in wherever you were. And you got to remember, again, brilliant run by Dawn and Fiona to have backed up so soon after hitting the podium at Tarawera 100 mile. Whoa. So the men, Keith Burrows, 82.98 kilometres, Paul Hewitson, 72.61 kilometres, James Inwood, 66.33, Wayne Botha, indomitable?
Indefatigable.
There.
Not into shoes.
65.60 kilometres, and Stuart Hughes, 64.18 kilometres.
Amazing.
Mm.
And Keith, I mean, Keith Burrows, fascinating guy. He won the Alps to Ocean, and he's run the inauspicious total of 222 kilometres for the 24 hours previously. Wow. Do the math on that one. I mean, he's been, he said he'd been struggling with a hamstring injury, but it didn't look like it held him back much.
No,
well done, Keith.
Yeah, well done. So good, great stuff for everyone who took part in that. And of course, as we mentioned at the top, Barclays was on over the weekend too. So it started on Friday night, but it was all over pretty quickly.
Well, by Barclays.
Yeah, true.
So Jared Campbell, who's won the event before, and Luke Nelson were the only runners to get out on a third loop. But they failed to get back within the 36-hour time limit to be allowed to continue for a fourth, although they finished within the 40 hours allowed to be credited with what Laz calls a fun run, 39 hours and 4 minutes.
Did you get a certificate for that?
I don't think you get bugger all, really. You get played, is it Danger Dave or whatever his name is, plays taps badly on a beat.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There was a lot of hope this year that it would be the first year that we'd have a female finisher or winner, with Maggie Gutierrez and Courtney Dewalter and Liz Canty competing, and they kind of all ran together. Mm-hmm. But they came in from their second loop in 26 hours and 52 minutes, which was 12 minutes over the cutoff. So they were tapped out too. So,
well, I mean, if you think about it, 12 minutes is an eternity of apart from 6 seconds. You know.
Gary,
that was... Jeez Louise.
So Barclay wins again.
Yeah. I mean, John Kelly, who's the most recent finisher, he pointed out in a tweet that his this time as the most recent finisher will now have at least outlasted a presidency, a pandemic. He said a presidency, at least, a pandemic, hopefully, and the entire Brexit saga. It's nearly the same age as our twins who started school this year. I think the Barclay needs term limits.
Yeah, wow. So he also put together a series of really thoughtful tweets about misconceptions about the race, because it's taken on this kind of mythical status, hasn't it? For instance, he said, yes, it does take mental toughness, but you can't simply tough it out. Failure doesn't mean you weren't tough enough. The course gets tougher, he says, but so too does our gear and our training and our collective experience. It's a delicate balancing act, he said, to keep it just at that end of the possible and stretch it out fully across our spectrum of possibilities. And finally, he asks, has it become too hard? That's been asked often in the last 30 years. And that's where the opportunity lies. Doing what once couldn't be done carries far greater appeal than redefeating something already conquered. Barclay Marathons requires that motivation, as all great goals should.
Mm.
Really thoughtful, I thought.
It is thoughtful, absolutely.
Mm. Really, and some good inspirational stuff there. Right, speaking of inspirational stuff.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write in and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block, something that sung to you for some reason. You could send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Caitlin Pickett. And she said, like thousands of others on the 13th of February, I lined up in Rotorua to run my first ever Tarawera 50-kilometre race. Two friends and I had signed up after lockdown in 2020. However, both had pulled out due to various reasons, so I was lining up by myself. But I had my mum, my boyfriend and some friends there to cheer me on. I'd completed this distance before, but never at an organised event. I was feeling nervous, excited and especially grateful to have the opportunity to be there when the rest of the world is in such chaos. I was stoked to hear Matt, on the loudspeaker at the start line with Dirt Church Radio. Oh, that is very kind, being one of my favourite podcasts. Oh, I had a few of my favourite episodes downloaded just in case I had a rough patch, she says. I don't know if that would have helped or hindered, but...
Yeah.
The weather was perfect. The starting horn sounded and away we went, heading off through the steamy atmosphere of Tapuia. I didn't want to get carried away and head out too fast, so I focused on trying to run at my own pace and quickly settled into my rhythm. Before I knew it, I was passing through the first aid station where I stopped for a quick bite to eat. My boyfriend was meeting me at Lake Tikitapu aid station, and so along I trotted. The shores of Lake Rotokakahi were around the next corner and took my breath away. The sun was beginning to come out from behind the clouds and the surface of the water shone like a jewel. My feeling of gratefulness was amplified. Getting into Lake Tikitapu with only 16 kilometres to go, I was feeling relatively good. I'd managed to keep a consistent pace and maintain my nutrition, although I knew the last 7 kilometres along the flat were going to be the hardest part for me. With a water top up, some words of encouragement and a hug for the trail, away I went. I put on my favourite music for the descent down into the Redwoods aid station and I was having a blast, feeling like I was flying, although probably a bit too much as I took a little tumble.
Ooh.
Yeah, but thankfully only bruised my pride. I managed to push through the last tough bit to come out into the finish line feeling strong and achieving a personal best time of 6 hours and 16 minutes. A big hug and some tears from my mum and my boyfriend. I was feeling so proud, not only of what we'd achieved, what I'd achieved, but what everyone had achieved. I'm extremely thankful to have spent the day surrounded by others who undoubtedly felt the same, as this has made Tarawera 2021 my greatest run ever. Cheers, Caitlin. Oh, come on.
Caitlin, wow.
Thank you. That's so
awesome. Yeah. Far out. What a great description of everything. It was taking me right back.
I kind of want to put it away almost, but then I don't, you know, like you kind of want to go, okay, so just that's done now, put that away. But then everyone writes and it's just like, yes.
Yeah, that steamy atmosphere at Tapuia.
That's right. That was a killer.
It's magic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. So thank you, Caitlin. And the rest of you, send them in. We love seeing them and people love hearing them and reading them. Right. Jamie Hawker.
Jamie Hawker's a legend.
He is. Full stop.
Yeah, pretty much. This man, I mean, I was very, very surprised. And again, we got a shout out to Bonnie Hawker, his wonderful wife, who sort of organised this on his behalf. It's amazing. Jamie is unassuming, and it speaks to the man's character, eh, that he's unassuming. He's heavily involved in the Christchurch running scene. He guides and organises for the Achilles Foundation. He's one of the Speed Freaks, Odyssey House Recovery running coaches and mentors. He is the race director for the Crater Rim Ultra. He is a runner in his own right, having, as he says, completed his first 100K at the age of 18, gone through what can only be described as indescribably tough times on some runs, and then sort of at this stage of his life, is until his injury has been thrashing around, ticking all the boxes. You might know his son, Scotty Hawker. He's pretty good at running. And this was a fantastic conversation that we feel very privileged to have had. So without further delay, Jamie Hawker.
Radio.
All right, we're very pleased to have on the line all the way from Lincoln in Christchurch, the legendary Jamie Hawker. Jamie, kia ora, and how are you going?
Greetings, guys. No, going very good.
So we were saying off, we must give a shout out at the top to your lovely wife, Bonnie, who really dropped you in it, really, with us, didn't she? She's organised this conversation, but was really keen to advocate for the amazing causes that you've championed over the years.
Yeah, I guess I was very surprised, because when she said, oh, also, I've got another little surprise for you, just after I'd got back on Saturday from helping organise an Achilles Christchurch Run Rupuna event. So, you know, I was very surprised to say that I was suddenly going to be chatting to you guys.
Well, we did warn you when we caught up with you down at Kepler and Tiano. We did warn you that we wanted to get you on the show. So it shouldn't have come as a complete surprise, but good that you've got you.
That was so last year, guys.
Gosh, it seems a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
2021 certainly took off where 2020 left off, didn't it?
It certainly has. I mean, year of events, that's for sure.
Mm.
So tell us, I mean, I guess let's start in the top. I mean, like, tell us about this run that you've just helped organise. Tell us about Run Rupuna and what it is, and indeed, like, about the Achilles Foundation.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I've been off and on, and one of the ways that I get enjoyment from my running now is I don't necessarily go out and chase the fastest times of the longest distances, the higher up rankings. One of my enjoyments I get now is to look out for other ways of getting a running buzz. And I found that being a guide for a blind runner and in Christchurch. So I went out and became a guide for a group called Achilles Christchurch. Now, they're a nationwide New Zealand and international worldwide organisation. And so I thought, well, if I can go out and help, because one of the things that I'm still very humbled by is that there are some guys I know now that the only way that they can possibly go out for a run because they're blind is if a person is willing to be their guide. Now, when we think about what we want to do and the buzz that we get from our own running, it sort of, say, very humbles me to. And so that was my motivation to want to become a guide with the Achilles off and on. And so the opportunity came up just after the Crater Rim Ultra just finished, and the Achilles were given the opportunity of having the Mike Pirro Motorsport Park through Mark at the Canterbury Car Club to generously supply us the track, where, of course, Scott Dixon still holds a lap record. So it's a 3.4K circuit track down here in Templeton and Christchurch. So to have such a great smooth surface, that would be great for all types of abilities for people to be able to come along and enjoy running around Ruapuna, which is also a point of difference with your running. So it sort of grew from there way back in November last year.
Brilliant. And so what was it? What was the, who ran and how was it raising funds?
Well, it was a combination of raising funds, but it's also probably a much as one of the things that Achilles International does, one of their missions is that statements is they want to enable people of all ages with all different types of disabilities to participate in probably mainstream athletics and help to promote their own personal achievements and self-esteem and lower barriers. So with the idea of coming along, and our Achilles group is made up of a lot of blind or low vision members. And so with that in mind, we thought, well, let's look at doing a walking, a running, a hand cyclist, wheelchairs. And we looked at how can we do this in a safe environment. We had some skateboarders rung us up, and they'd done a 24-hour skate-a-thon at Ruapuna a few years earlier. So we discussed that at one of our Zoom meetings. And we thought, well, if we can keep the wheels entrance separate from the runners and walkers, because we also, of course, a lot of our members wanted to take part as well. And so to enable our members to take part, we separated the track down the middle so that on one side was all the wheeled entrance, and we even had a pram and hand cyclists and wheelchairs and skateboarders all doing different distances. And then, of course, on the other side, we had the runners and the walkers. So it was well spread out and gave a great variety of choice. I mean, we even had one of the mums with a pram, so we had to put her on the wheeled side, of course. So it was a great day out.
Oh, brilliant.
And how many people did you have doing the event?
Well, and of course, in Christchurch, being, apart from, I have to say now, hand on heart, the Crusaders beating Auckland on Sunday, we also had...
How long did that take?
I didn't see the game.
It took about six minutes.
Sorry, yeah. Did it happen?
Sorry, guys, slipped out. But also, we had on the Sunday, the very following day, when we were looking to organise this, we had our annual City to Surf. And after, with our COVID year last year and cancelling the event, we had it on this year on the Sunday, straight after the event on our Saturday. But because the only time we could get for the park was the Saturday, we said, right, let's do it. So we took that on. And then, of course, just after that, we found out that the race, which is a popular cycle race from Christchurch to Akaroa, they decided to reschedule to that day as well. So considering all those challenges, we still got 100 people come along, and from walking, running, hand cyclists, wheelchairs, skateboarders, prams, we had all those people go around either doing a half marathon, a 10K, a two laps, which is 6.8Ks, or even though starting out, they could complete a one lap. And get the old smell of the petrol and fumes that Scott Dixon has done there before.
Brilliant. And so tell us a bit about guiding, because I know that I'll be honest, it's something that I've thought about over the years, but I've always been scared of, because I don't want to hurt anyone, and I'm quite clumsy, and I kind of worry, oh, am I going to put someone in harm's way? But so what does it actually involve when you do guide someone?
One of the things, and I'm like you, I didn't know what was involved with guiding, but I thought, right, this is another way that I can give back and get another fix for my running buzz by helping these other people. And you get tethered and you get a bungee and a cord. One of the things that I've learnt, and maybe it's partly an age thing because I'm a little bit more experienced in terms of age, it means that I don't mind asking questions. And the blind people that I'm walking with, or they have low vision, they'll tell you, no, look, walk, you know, run beside me, hold it tight. If suddenly there's someone coming the other way and you're on a path, put your right hand that you're tethered to, the guide, to the runner, put your hand behind your back, and then they know to go into single file. Little things like that, or to mention, and the things that we take for granted, as able-sighted people, we take curbs. You know, the curbs or the footpaths, we take them for granted. We go around on uneven surfaces. One of the funny things that I've learned is when you're running with a guide, especially running around Hagley Park in our lovely Christchurch City, when it's been raining, they have a lot of gravel tracks that the water fills up. Now, as a runner, a blind runner, you just run straight through, so the guide has to follow. So that's one of the funny things that I think I've found. And, of course, there's no wrong way of guiding. it's just a matter of talking to the person you're guiding, and they'll soon tell you what works for them. And I've done it with two or three different people, and different people have different things that, hey, look, I find this works for me, or I find this works for me, or the pace is good, or I'll set the pace, or yeah. So I believe the most important thing is just communicate with the person you're guiding.
Makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's not just vision impaired people, is it? I mean, you've touched on this, but Achilles Foundation encourages, you know, everyone to get out and run.
Oh, absolutely. One of the memories that I got from our run Ruapuna on the weekend was we had two boys, their mother signed them up, and one of the boys, I think he's got a type of dwarfism, and he came out, he's a 15-year-old lad, and he came out with his special needs bike, got out on the start line with his brother, who also had just a normal cycle bike, and to see them bike around on the start line when they started to go around the track, and when they came across the finishing line down the main chute with the checkered flag flying, because you've got to have a checkered flag on the track when you're finishing, which is, again, a great way to have a race with a point of difference. When we put that medal around his neck, that smile will be something that I'm going to have as a memory. That's why we volunteer. Yeah, and so, and it's great, and that was what was good. One of the other people I met was Sarah. Now, Sarah wheelchaired her 21 Ks around the track. Now Sarah's off to the senior national track and field champs next week. And looking for a place for the Paralympics in Tokyo. So it was great to meet Sarah. I think our 21K was a training run for her.
Yep.
And she's going off to the Nationals next week up in Hastings. And then, of course, a couple of weeks after that, she's back in Christchurch with the marathon weekend coming up. So it's great to get a cross-section of all different people with abilities. You know, some people have got muscular dystrophy. Some people have asthma. So it's anybody really who wants to come along and enjoy a run. And of course, we can provide guides. We don't care whether you're fast or slow. It's all about everyone gets the same medal when you complete the race. And that's another thing I liked about this event with Run Ruapuna. We don't have age groups. We don't have medals for first, second or third. It's about participation, have fun, and to be able to say at the end of the day, whatever event, whether you did 21 Ks or whether you did one lap, we all got the same medal. So that's great.
It really, it's when you describe it, I mean, as a runner, as an able-bodied runner, you know, there's so much that you actually, and you said you, it adds another sort of layer to your satisfaction with running. There's so many barriers for so many different types of people in terms of, and not even running, but just movement or the freedom to move or the having the right environment where they don't feel kind of embarrassment or shame. It's so, like, sounds like a really special, incredible thing to, you know, be involved with in that moment.
Oh, very much. And I've been involved at club level of an athletic club group, and I've seen some other groups around. And one of the things that I think I like about with the Achilles, because of perhaps with the disability of groups and the different people, the stigma of, I don't want to be last one to finish. I'm too slow. You know, I can't do it. If you come along to the Achilles group, I'd say rubbish. Whether you're a guide and you want a guide, we'll put you to someone to pace accordingly. Don't get me wrong. One of the guides that did the Run Ruapuna on the weekend, he's completely blind. Now, he's training for the Christchurch full marathon. So this blind runner's got his guide, and they were doing the full marathon. Well, that last weekend, they had to do 30K training run. So he decided that he would come out and do the 21K with his guide. And then half an hour later, they backed it up and did the 10K race. So nice. He got his 31Ks in. So it just shows you that whether you can have the faster ones that want to go out and do a sub 4 hour as a blind runner, but equally, we don't care what your time, and we don't even need to record the times as such. It's just the fact that you participate. And as I said, at the end of the day, whether you got first or 101st, you all got the same medal. So you've all got bragging rights.
And when you talk about sort of stigma and that kind of, isn't it funny? I was just reflecting when you were talking about that. Growing up, going to school, that kind of thinking about like ultra marathons and trail runs and things that we do. The cheers are as loud for the first place as the last place, right? And right throughout the spectrum, and that's how it should. And not to say that everyone wins all the time. There should be competition, but that level of kind of, you're doing great, the encouragement and the kind of the recognition of the achievement. But isn't it funny how that when we're like often with kids, and if you're a bit slow or you're a bit you know, you've got something else going on, that joy can really be sucked out when you're kind of, you know, for those of us who, you know, weren't so athletically gifted, thinking about school sports day still kind of gives me the, you know, like, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. It's amazing what you're doing to kind of knock that on its head, because it does carry forward through people's lives, hey?
Oh, very much so. And I think that lends itself probably to one of the other groups that I assist in.
Absolutely.
And these are guys from Odyssey House, a group I've been working with for the last 3 or 4 years. And we got 6 of the residents came out. For those listeners who don't know, Odyssey House is a drug and rehabilitation group. And we've got guys now that when we started off, we said, look, I went along to give them a short talk about helping them to do the City to Surf about 4 years ago. And then I said, you know, double things as runners, you know, to double tie your shoelaces, you know, to not have breakfast and then go out and run half an hour later. Well, most of us. And things like that, or don't go too fast. They don't hand out medals in the first K of any race that I'm aware of, so not to go out too fast or too early. And, of course, I'm going along with that sort of theme, then I could see that these guys wanted to run. Well, because I enjoyed the running, we started running groups twice a week because I had the time because I was slowing down work-wise. And so, yeah, I've been with them close on now for just on 4 years, and then I had a break and was going to travel around the South Island with my wife, and then we got some other coaches came on board, and they're now joining us as well. And these are guys with a lot of experience who can see the value of just getting beside these guys and saying, when we get on the start line, we all have the race bib. We all want to get from A to B. And I think that's what I like about running. It helps to destigmatize, certainly with Odyssey House. And so the advantage of that is we don't know who's next to us. It could be a priest on one side, it could be an ex-murderer, extreme case scenario, or it could be a policeman. We don't know. And that's the beauty of running. When you have a bib on, no matter what your background is, everybody wants to cheer you on. And for those guys, it's great.
And thinking about that, you know, in terms of recovery, and if we're being honest, any one of those people, and, you know, ex-murderer included, in the could actually have a
extreme case scenario
could have struggles with addiction. You know, could actually, it's that, that stigmatization, isn't it? Like only bad people do drugs, only weak people do drugs, only people who do crime do drugs, only people who do this. And we find out that with that, it's just simply not true.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess we do sort of tend to stereotype people. And one of the things that I found is they started up the Odyssey House, and the lads themselves decided a few years ago, as one of them told me, running's their drug of choice now. Mm. And if we think about ourselves as runners, we run partly because we want that connection with other people.
Mm.
You know, why do we go out week after week, going out on the trails or the roads and having that connection? And it's no different with anybody else. And so the beauty of that by having with the Odyssey House lads, and, of course, that connection means that they came out and helped do community service that allowed the Achilles Christchurch members who would have had to organise the event, they were actually able to go in the event and do their one lap and get their medals, because the 6 or 7 lads that were able to help set up the track and set all the things that need water stations. So it was a great community event for them to take part of. Mm. And then, of course, they backed it up on Sunday by all going to do the City to Surf. And Brilliant. The whole house came out, and all the staff, and also the women's group that they've now started with the Speed Freaks at Mochicolara as well. So, yeah, the word's spreading about running and what running can do at all different levels, as you say, the elites, and we've got to put these winners up on pedestals that win our events, but equally for the ones in the middle that just want to go out and get from A to B. And for them, 5Ks for some people is Mount Everest. And if they can achieve that, to them, they're putting 100% effort in to achieve that. I would argue and say that's as much of an achievement as a person going out wanting to achieve 100Ks.
Mm. Absolutely.
I mean, if you give 100%, what more can you do, whatever the distance is?
That's right. And the thing that struck me, I mean, we spoke to Anna, and I can't remember.
Ray.
And Ray, that's right, 2 years ago, actually.
Yeah. That's right.
And just that, again, thinking about the fact that for these guys, it's not, I mean, the physical part's difficult. It's the mental challenge. It's the delaying the gratification. It's the getting over, conquering all those, that self-stigma, that feelings of shame or feelings of this is too hard and I want to stop. And, you know, having to just consistently do something that you don't get an immediate reward for it must be so challenging for someone with an addiction.
Oh, very much so. And I think because we as members of society, if we can be non-judgmental and accept, hey, these guys just want to run, in my case, all I see them as runners.
Mm.
I don't see them as anything else. And that's the time that I spend with them is just running. And I just treat them as, you know, John, Joe, Paul, and whoever it is. And I just treat them as equal. And because of that, I think they learn to accept that, hey, not all society is bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, if they've fallen and taken a step back, but they also then have the ability. And all I guess we do is offer a choice. We can choose to be a runner or a walker, whatever. And all we're doing is giving them some more tools so that when a situation presents itself, they have that choice to say, right, this is what I want to do.
Mm.
And I actually, on that note, I saw Ray at the City to Surf yesterday too, so he's running well.
That's good stuff. Hear. That's really good to hear. Yeah.
You know, he's still running. This is 18 months, nearly 2 years on. So
yeah.
And as we know, that's the beauty of running is you can have, you know, running is an addiction and you can go in and out of your running life cycle.
Yeah.
Whether you want to, when you've got more time or less time, and that's the beauty of what running does.
Mm-hmm. What do you get out of it, Jamie? What does it give you?
People say to me, I think it gives me gratification. And I guess one of the things that I learned early in life was a hard lesson to learn. I was out on a fun run with my father in Christchurch here, just in a park run, the local fun runs back in the day. And we were heading down the road and he literally dropped dead on me physically in a park run and at a young age of 52. And so I guess I learnt, and I was a young 23-year-old, and I guess from that I learnt there's a time to work hard and then there's a time to slow down. And so for me now, I don't want to have the flashiest coffin handles in the cemetery. I want to be able to make use of my time and my enjoyment. So my enjoyment now is passing on to other people what a running coach did for me when I joined the local running club 10 years ago.
Mm.
He had time. This was a guy who was 72 and had a hip operation. He'd been with my local running club for many years, and we struck it off. I was a willing student, and he was a willing coach. And for 3 or 4 years, he would come out on his bike, hand me my water bottles as I had the time to start doing longer distances. So then when, unfortunately, he died himself, the club asked me, would I be the local club captain? So I felt I had the time to pay back.
Mm.
To say thank you or pay it forward, as a lot of people would probably recognise.
Yeah.
So I still feel that for now in my circle of life at the moment, I've got a good balance. And for me, when I see that guy going across the finish line, you know, and getting the medal around his neck, or seeing blind runners out running 30Ks, very humbling.
Mm. So it's like you've been passed the baton. And, I mean, you know, what you went through with your dad dying, that it sets your mindset, doesn't it? It makes you think there's more to life than, like you say, the flashiest handles and the. That's a great line.
It's a great line.
Mm.
Yeah, the flashiest handles in the cemetery.
Mm. Mm.
But some people, don't get me wrong, everything's different for everybody.
Yeah.
But for me, and that's the other thing, I don't so much worry about what other people do. I can't control what they do. But I can choose what I want to do and what I want to do. Is like they say, and I keep saying it, maybe because of my dad dying, I know how quickly death can come to all of us. I'm not trying to be a down tone on the chat though, guys, but
no.
It makes you realise, live every day, enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Get the buzzes. And running in the last 10 years has given, and I've been overseas and I've done, and of course with my son Scotty, been a top racer, and I've got to enjoy the experiences and the highs and the lows. I've been a parent and proud when Scotty represented New Zealand at the World Champs, and then when your son's off injured, and then I've had my own injury in the last 6 months, so that's another learning curve. But it's still a reason to keep me motivated. And I guess by me being able to work with some other people, and this at the moment it's the Achilles group, it's helping me get my fix. It's helping keep me on my connection to other people.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it?
I can't go and run at the moment, so I'm back out on my bike while these guys are running.
Yeah.
So I find other ways to still get my running buzz.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? People don't have to be – you can love the sport, but you don't have to be running if you're injured or whatever, or you're not feeling like it at the moment. But you can get involved in the organisation and the volunteering side like you do, and it can be extremely rewarding.
Oh, very much. I had one of the guys, in fact, yesterday – from Odyssey House said, oh, I'm not really a runner, Jamie, and I don't really like walking. I said, look, but we need you because this guy jumped on his bike and ran with one of the guys down to Hagley Park to do the parkrun. And because they have to, you know, go in pairs. So this guy just jumping decided that I don't want to run, I don't really want to walk, but he jumped on his bike to help his mate so he could go down and do the parkrun. So there's many ways to help out. You're really only restricted by your own desire to, you know, get out and help someone else, and that's a great reward, as we know.
So with the speed freaks, they is that one of the protocols? Is it if they're going to go out and do a run separate from the training, that they go together to keep themselves sort of accountable and safe?
Oh, very much so, yeah. And, of course, sometimes, like I went out this morning with them, we went for a walk, and because the guys did the City to Surf yesterday, I said, look, rest day today. And that's a part of their learning curve. I mean, when you start out with the runners, you make sure they go slowly and build up, unlike some that want to go 100 miles an hour and then they get their injuries early. So the Odyssey House group are planning to do the half marathon in Hamner in May. So we had a chat about another side of running, which is called nutrition, or it's called what gear are you going to wear, you know, about vests or about poly props or about gloves or about beanies or about buffs. And there's a whole gambit of different parts of the running that don't always relate just to a training program.
Well, that's right,
so
isn't it? Go on.
I printed off a couple of pages of what the event for Hamner is about, and let them know that there's water stations at every 5Ks. And so having that knowledge, that's a reason why they don't need to carry a drink bottle with them, so that's less weight to carry. And those little tips of information that we've picked up, and to be able to pass that on, and once you know and have a plan and a training program, but also you know what gear you're going to do. And I say to people, and if you train the way you race and you race the way you train, come race day, nothing changes.
Yeah, I guess
I've learned a little bit of that from Scotty as well, of course.
So what, I mean...
I better give him a plug.
I hear he's a pretty good runner. What is your history with running? I mean, you know, you said that you were running with your dad when you were 23. How had you run from a kid?
No, my first recollection I have of running was I was 18 and young and bulletproof, and I did my first 100Ks when I was 18, way back in about 1980, or just say 80-ish. I did what was called the Simon and Lowther Fun Run. Back then they called it a fun run. And we started in the Christchurch Square and we went all over. I was a roller skater, and so I was always roller skating 5, 6, 7 days a week. So I guess I built up all this energy and strength that I was able to. And I remember to this day, getting on the start line, no drink bottle, no support crew, no food. I just thought I was bulletproof. I could get on the line. So I ran 100Ks and finished in 12 hours 59, because I remember these things. And then I fell asleep in the bath, of course, for the next 4 hours when I finished. But then it was another 40 years later that I went back and did my second 100K. And I guessed, the years in between was, you know, wife, marriage, mortgage, jobs, children, all those different things for me got in the road. And so because of that, I didn't really start again running until I was 53, when I used to say I was post-kids and pre-grandkids. And although that's changed now, I might add.
Yeah.
That enabled me. I suddenly had the time to see, well, how do we crack at running all those years ago? What can I do now? And so over the last 10 years, I've had a great run with running, 10 years, a lot of kilometres, races. I've done Comrades, the biggest road race in the world in South Africa. You know, I've done the Great Wall of China. Running's allowed me to go to Chicago and run the Chicago Marathon. You know, I ran around Rarotonga with my family and 20 other family members. We made it a week over there. So, yeah, running's taken me to many places with many experiences. And now at the moment, the Achilles and the Odyssey House is just another chapter in that running adventure.
Wow. I mean, that's the thing. It's given you not just times and, you know, you remember the times, obviously, but it's not just about the times. It's about the memories that you've created and the experiences you've had.
Very much so. And now I would argue and say that, you know, that some of the runs, and now this run Rupuna, that's another one in my memory banks that I'm always going to have to say, hey, that was great. I was able to help to be part of seeing all those people cross the finish line and get their medals. Running gives back to me. So for now, while I, as you say, while I carry the relay baton, for want of a better word, while on my watch, this is what I can help to contribute and be part of a team. And then when we pass it on to the next person, it's and that's what we're seeing now, even at Odyssey House. When I first went along, I was sort of their shadows and when their runners went out. Well, now those runners that went out with me now become the shadows for the next group of runners, and it's growing on. And as we, you may have heard Leo, one of the guys here.
He did an ultra.
Leo, he's done two. He decided he would do the Port Hills Ultra. First 75k, and then 3 weeks later, not content with that, he went over to the old ghost and did 85k's.
Oh my gosh!
Fantastic. And when you think 12 months ago, he wasn't running.
Wow, wow!
And now there's a wee rumor that Leo signed up to a miler, so that's a whole new challenge for Leo.
Yeah, wow!
And that's something that's, you know, that I'd be so lazy and I guess a bit sort of perhaps one-sided thing, oh, you know, it's that addictive personality. We all, I think as runners, if you think about it, it's the wolf that you feed, right? We all have that part of us. And I put my hand up 100%. And you know, I absolutely have an addictive personality. Anyone who knows me knows that I do. And it's that that sense of like, I hope he's able to balance that out in terms of maintaining the enjoyment from the running. But like, what a way to challenge. Channel that energy, hey?
Oh, very much. And of course, with that, and as we say, one of the other Odyssey House members told me, you know, the opposite of addiction is connection.
Yes.
And we need that connection. And I thought, yeah, that's true. And that's what I guess I get to perhaps see sometimes my background and thought process as to why do I enjoy the running? And I guess without realizing it, it's because of the connection that I have to other runners, and because of that, you know, as you say, we're all in the same boat, we're all heading down the same track.
We were talking to someone just before and they were saying that, and we've encountered this too, these running events, and I think about like Northburn or, you know, Kepler or Tarawera, they're like a two-day summer camp. You know, you turn up and you're surrounded suddenly with hundreds if not thousands of completely like-minded people. And it's just that sort of, you know, that sense of that connectivity, that everyone just connects and tries to cram as much sort of socialization in and with the running, and then everyone kind of disperses back out into the community, and then everyone kind of turns up again at a different time. It's quite a wonderful phenomena.
Well, yeah, you've only and one of, I think, some of the events that are quite good are the ones that you go away as a group. I mean, I went over to the Buller Marathon recently, and that's been one that's been very iconic over many years. And I wasn't able to run, but I was able to go over and support the guys in the car. But you make it a weekend, and we had another runner who went and did their first ever half marathon. And so it was great to, even though I wasn't running, it was great to, you know, get them to the start line and wave them goodbye. And I could sort of, I didn't go back to bed, but I got to go back and wait for them to come through the finish line. And I think, as you say, it's a whole weekend that encompasses everything from going away, driving from Christchurch over to the West Coast and go for the weekend. And some races you're out, if you're support crew, you could be out for a very long time if your runner's doing 100K or a miler. But then it's that connection. And then when you finish, and then you might even fly back if it's going, you know, from one island to the next. But it is, it's that connection that we get to do it, get our fix, whether it be as a support person or whether to be a runner or whether it be an administrator or an organiser, to be a volunteer, whatever the hat we wear, it's in that running group. And then, as you say, we get to do it over and over again.
And then it's those connections that you make when you're running or when you're volunteering or whatever, the strangers who you meet. But you've got something in common. You, like you say, you don't know what their background is, but you've got this amazing thing in common, and you run along or you're volunteering next to them, and you find that you've got all sorts of other connections as well. And you become mates on the trail, don't you? It's a great sport in that regard.
Oh, very much. In fact, I was with standing on the bridge at Buller Marathon with this new runner, and this girl was doing the first ever 10K. Half marathon it was, and I And I was standing there, and because I've been in the running circles for a while, I sort of knew quite a few people because they come across from Christchurch. And so I was saying, you know, go Joe, go Mary, go. And, well, you know a lot of runners, don't you? And I said, well, we keep seeing each other. And up on the Port Hills of Christchurch and training runs, or we, as you say, we see them at events. And when you're starting to see a lot of people, but then one of the funny things I will always remember is I went up to Tarawera one year when, while Scotty was running the particular event, but we're at one particular checkpoint, and I like to encourage people. And so I kept, when the runners were coming through, I kept calling out, you know, go Mary, go Joe. And this lady beside me said, oh, you know so many people here. And do you do a lot of running? I said, no, I'm just reading their name bibs. Their names are on the bibs. And everybody loves when we're running. We love to hear their own name called out. It seems we puff up our chest, and for those two or three next strides, they seem to be very easy.
Yeah.
So it's just a great community thing that is what running can give you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, another feather in your bow is that you are – sorry, feather in your hat. That was terrible. Another feather in your hat is you organise the – I mean, talk about connection. You organise the Crater Rim Ultra, which sounds stunning, brutal. People say it's amazing. I mean, tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, the last 3 or 4 years, when Scotty was back home and one of us sitting around the kitchen table, we were looking at doing a running event and how can we grow it, because of course ultras, if you think 5 years ago, there weren't as many ultras around in New Zealand. And I guess because Scotty was running overseas, I was probably hearing information about how the ultra running was growing. And of course we knew that the wave would come over towards New Zealand at given time. And certainly now when you look at the New Zealand running calendar on any other week of the year now, there's an event out there somewhere for somebody of any description. And so Scotty said, why don't we start with from Hanson Park, which is the home of the running club I'm with, the Port Hills Club, why don't we get a bus to Lyttelton and then a boat across to the start line in Diamond Harbour? And, of course, again, with so many races around, what is it that's going to attract people to want to come to your event? Mm. And to be able to start with a bus and a boat ride, I think the only other event I've done in 10 years where that's happened is the Auckland Marathon, where I've got onto the boat at stupid o'clock. Sometimes about 4:30 in the morning, and gone on the boat to get over to Devonport to start the Auckland Marathon. So, yeah, and from that, the Crater Rim Ultra was born. We had been running it for about 15 years with the Port Hills Club before I sort of come along, and we'd just done it on the Christchurch side. So we decided we'd take a punt, and because the Port Hills Club were very supportive and financially backing it, because we didn't know what we were getting in for and who would want to come along. And, yeah, over the last 4 years, we've had a team and we've grown it to around just under 700 runners last year in October. And after a year of COVID and not having our entries closed down 3 weeks after we'd opened them in March with COVID, we were very happy. And of course, no international runners last year.
Mm.
One of the advantages with the Crater Rim Ultra too is it doubles as the New Zealand Trail Running Championships.
Mm.
So this gives an opportunity from people all over New Zealand to come to Christchurch, try out how good am I at running. If you're one of those ones that is, well, my running's getting better, but I need to find out, am I the best in New Zealand? So we have the race, and this year they've got an 83K Ultra, so it's gone up from the 53 from last year. And again, this year it's going to be the New Zealand Trail Running Championship.
Oh, wow.
And like a lot of people, you think of Michael Campbell in golf. He won the New Zealand Golf Open. Or you think of the tennis players, they want to win the New Zealand Tennis Open. Runners, if you're a trail runner, I challenge them, see if you can be the best runner and win the New Zealand Trail Running Championships.
Mm.
So, and that's for the men and the women. And, you know, last year we had a great run of local runners, including Scotty and Weston and Nancy and Mel. These are names that we relate to on the New Zealand running circuits. And we had a great day out there challenging themselves over some fantastic. Well, I keep saying to them that we believe they're extinct volcanoes, so they get to run around the top of these old extinct volcanoes called the Crater Rim. So, yeah, no, it's a great event, and it's happening again this year.
That's good news.
And what's this year looking like? I mean, so you're back on, it's all looking good?
Yeah, no, back on, entries are open, very early days. And again, because it's a stop-start and people have also – we don't know, are we going to have international flights? Are we going to be able to get our Australian friends to come over and join, and that's going to make a very – we don't want to go – and we had – last year had to we gave back to the Australian runners that had already signed up to come over because they were hoping that COVID might go away and we might be able to get out of Melbourne and Sydney and Perth and come over. But as it eventuated, that didn't happen with our borders closed. So, yeah, so those people will be keen to come back as soon as our borders open. And,
yeah.
And the beauty of something like the Crater Room, it can be totally international.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to ask you, I mean, as a father, I want my kids to share my love of running and to share, you know, in the enjoyment and to share and to achieve and find satisfaction from the sport. I have to ask, what's it like having a son who's a internationally renowned elite ultramarathon runner?
I think I learned that lesson very early in life. I have another son, younger son called Michael, and at age 13, he decided, I've had enough of playing football, I'm going to go to golf. And so Michael at age 13 went to golf at the local golf club, and 2 years later he was on a scratch handicap. So
wow.
Suddenly he became the senior and I became the junior. And he can wrap the club around his body twice. And in the same way with Scott, I said to my son when I play golf with him, hey, it's all about the handicaps. And as I say now with Scott, it's been great. And again, one of my when he did UTMB, I think it was about five years ago, he was sitting in 11th spot. And because UTMB is the biggest, arguably I say it's a bit like the Tour de France equivalent on the world scene for trail running, I thought, great, I'm going to see Scotty finish at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And then after the top 10 runners came in, they switched to the woman. So I never got to see Scotty finish that particular year. But fortunately for that, nearly 2 years ago now, we got to watch Scotty have that fantastic race that to date he'll remember as one of his better races, where he not only was able to go out and complete the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc race, which is the unofficial probably world championships of trail running, he also got on the podium and with his mate Power from Spain. So, yeah, very proud parent moment. And to be able to see, because what's quite unique about that race is they have bikes and they have scooters and they have runners all with cameras, and they follow the top four or five runners for about the last 5 to 8 Ks. So for me as a parent sitting on the other side of the world, it was great to be able to see Scotty probably seeing the track in the last few Ks as we would see it from the camera lens. So, you know, a great moment to share. And then to see him with Sienna, and I think that picture, and I've got a couple of copies of him coming down the home street with Sienna running a little wee socks off trying to keep up with Daddy. That'll be a memory that'll stay in my memory banks for many, many years to come.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be one of the
parent moment.
That's got to be one of the best finish line photos of all time, that one.
Yeah, well, like I say, and we don't know what Scotty – well, Scotty said to me, look, he's probably got another 5 or 6 UTMBs in him. He's only a young 34-year-old now. So he would like to think he's got 5 or 6 more times getting on the start line. And for him, UTMB is his Mount Everest or his challenge. So, yeah, he would like to think he's got a podium or two in again.
Yeah.
And I guess as runners, once we achieve something, whether it's 5Ks, as soon as we get a time, it's an inherent human nature. We want to beat it.
Absolutely.
And it's true. Or if we think, well, I did 5Ks, well, can I do 10? And it doesn't matter what your demographic is. It's a unique, I think, trait in all of us that we want to succeed or do better than what we did before. So at one end, we see Scotty at the elite level trying to, well, can I replicate that good race that I had? But I also say to a lot of people, if you think of the next 10 races that you go to enter, you're not going to win every single one. So if you have a race and you have a DNF or you have a bad run, put a cross in the box, because all that means is you've got more ticks to come. And that's a great way, I think, of having to deal with if you do a race and you've got a DNF because suddenly you picked up an injury. Because we're quite hard on ourselves, I think, as runners. And we've got to relax and just realise, hey, we run first for the enjoyment and the share of the camaraderie, the medals and the placings and the fast times. I think they're all secondary.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I think it, looking at it in terms of the specific moment that we're in at the moment, like I went out for a long run yesterday, my long run, and I got home.
I'm jealous.
So your son has been beating me into shape, but I got home and I thought, that was okay. And I struggled because it was nothing happened. nothing bad happened, but nothing great happened either. You know, like it was just one of those kind of runs that you have, like a day that you have, or not every. It's interesting at the moment, isn't it? Like there's been so much, like we've been in and out of lockdown, or in and out of doing this, or this and that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
It almost felt like a slice of normality and sort of a completely normal run. And initially, I felt quite deflated, but then thought, no, that's a, like you said, that's a tick in the box. That's something I've learnt today that, you know, sometimes they just happen.
And equally, as I say to people too, sometimes as a regular runner, you know, 5 or 6 days a week, I now know a non-running day is as important for your body recovery, that you've got to discipline yourself not to go out for a run, to actually slow down. And if it says that, if you've got a running program and it says a day off, take the day off, yeah, because that then means that you're going to get your energy back, that you'll enjoy the next run that might be 2 days from now. So sometimes they say less is more, and that's all part of that process, depending on what distance you're choosing to do and what level of training. We shouldn't be so hard on ourselves because we don't achieve what we wanted to achieve that day. I've learned now to say, okay, shit happens, excuse my French, but that's a cross in the box. Well, that's great because now I've got more ticks to come, and that's just another way of looking at, you know, as you say, oh, just an average run. But then I also now I think of those average runs, I can cast my mind back and I think of the blind runner. So if we think, oh, we've only had an ordinary day, well, wait a minute, I know a guy who's standing there wanting to go out for a run, but unless he's got someone to run with him, he can't run. So suddenly my ordinary run seems pretty bloody good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a wonderful way to reframe it.
Yeah, bit of perspective, eh? Bit of perspective, never goes astray. Hey, look, Jamie, we have had, I think we should bottle what you've said and
that's right,
distribute it widely. It's amazing. Thank you so, so much. So we better let you go, but we can't let you go without asking one question, and it's one that we ask everyone, and that's, Jamie Hawker, what is your greatest run ever? Doesn't have to be a race or anything, just a run that you think of fondly and it really means something to you.
Thinking out loud to myself now, I haven't done a few runs. I think one of the best runs that I've completed in was for myself, and that was we did a round run at Rarotonga, and that's an event you go over for a week, and they have about 4 or 5 different race events as a team and as individuals, and there's 30Ks around the island, and we did that. But this one race was also, you actually, one day they go up and over the island. It's a short 8K run, but it's straight up over the top and down. And that particular event was, Scotty was first because he was only allowed to do that one race because he was coming back from injury. My brother-in-law got third in that event, and I managed a fifth. But what was, I guess I'll always remember though, was the fact that I was running with an 18-year-old, and we were both running side by side, coming down off the hill. I'm sure we were doing sub 4 minute Ks. And I was probably giving him about 2 or 3 times his age. But I guess all my training that I'd done and my build-up, and I was just, while I was getting puffed and exhausted though, I was able to keep running, and I managed to finish just in front of him at the finish line. And I went back and shook him by the hand and said, mate, that's one of my best runs I've had, because here I was out with someone I didn't know from as a stranger, but we were both out there doing what we love doing, and I was able to put my best effort into it. So, yeah, that race will linger very long for me, I'm sure, in my memory bank.
Wow. Yeah, you're sort of pushing each other and getting that enjoyment out of it. But the two of you, fantastic.
Yeah, it was only a short 8K run, but like I say, it was up the top of the mountain and down the other side.
Brilliant.
Sounds amazing. Hey, look, Jamie, thank you so much. We will put a link in our show notes for Achilles Foundation and Speed Freaks and the Crater Rim as well. And look, we wish you all the success for the future. I hope your injury gets better, and thank you for all that you bring to our sport and our community.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Someone did it for me, I think, we're not 10 years ago, so now I'll pay it forward. But one wee footnote, though, I was able to go out for my first running session today, 30 seconds on, 1 minute off, and I was able to do about 8 reps. So that's a sign I'm back into slow driving, so long may it get better and faster and quicker.
Wonderful.
That sounds like a tick,
thanks,
all right.
Thanks, guys. Cheers. Good to hear from you.
Cheers, okay, Jamie.
Cheers, Jamie.
Okay. Bye-bye.
counted the clock, and I think it was 6 minutes before he mentioned the Crusaders' victory over the Blitz.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, things doesn't matter. It's just one game.
It's just a tick in a box, Jamie.
It's just us crossing off that box and going, if you're not learning, you're winning something. I don't know.
What a great conversation. Thank you so much, Jamie, and thank you to Bonnie again for giving us the hurry along, basically, because we had said to Jamie when we were down at Kepler, we need to get you on. Anyway, we're glad we did, and I know that you will all be glad that we had him on too, because honestly, that was
some amazing lessons there. Get amongst it. It is so, I'll say this myself, you know, becoming involved in running and then doing lots of events, but then organizing some and volunteering and doing all, be it park run, be it another, like it's such a good, it's good for your soul.
Absolutely. You can find us on all the podcast platforms, and we are on social media at Dirt Church Radio and email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
That's right. And you can don't forget. Don't you can forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you, and you can read them on the website too.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Spring Energy and Sierra. And thank you to our Patreon supporters and Wild Things.
Yep. Thanks to our editor, Kieran. And we've got a really great show lined up for you next week. So please tune in then. Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.